Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallan. Our listeners learned how to get their dream job in a previous episode. Now they're working. So what happens next? How do blind employees get the most out of their new job or career? And how do they keep it that way? Joining me by phone is Marty Nemko. Marty is one of the country's most sought-after education and career experts. He's contributed to many news publications and television and radio shows. Marty is also a career coach and the host of the self-titled Work with Marty Nemko on KALW Radio in San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Marty.
My pleasure, except it wasn't self-titled. My station manager thought it was a fun pun to call it Work with Marty Nemko. I wouldn't be as egotistical as to do it that way.
Yes. So before we get into this sort of career advice thing, I got to ask you, what do you do as a career and education expert?
Well, I have a kind of a three-ring circus career. I have my private practice that I love, and right after we get off the phone here, I'll be seeing a client, a 60-year-old guy who's had trouble getting a job for a couple of years and was referred by another career counselor. I have a lot of those clients who have been challenging for other career counselors, and I host this radio show on work, as we just discussed. And I hug my doggy Einstein. It's one of my favorite recreational activities.
What kind of dog is he?
He's the cutest little doggy in the whole wide world. He's a little white doggy, and he's from the pound, and somebody threw him over the fence in the pound in the middle of the night and left him there, and he was found in the morning shaking, clutching a barbecue rib.
Oh. So now we got to talk about this career advice. We got to talk about how the blind and visually impaired can make the best of their own careers.
Right.
So I was looking at your website, martynemko.com. And I saw numerous advice topics you had, from personal growth to even just simple people skills.
Yep.
First, let's talk about the start of that job or career. How can our blind employees make those first days on the job successful?
Very, very important. And my way is to be very upfront and lighthearted about my disability, whatever it is. So, and there's no right or wrong. I'm sure you talk to four people, you get five different opinions. But if I were blind and I were starting on the job, I would sort of say, you might want, you know, everybody I met, I'd say, you might wonder, you know, what's it going to be like dealing with a blind person? Well, here are the things that you should understand, you should know. And here are the things that won't make a difference whether I'm, you know, fully sighted or blind. And in that tone of voice, notice the playful, relaxed tone of voice. Because if you take it too serious, if you sound too serious, you sound like a lawsuit waiting to happen, and everybody's going to be scared. They're going to treat you with kid gloves. They're not going to make you an insider. They're going to be very, very careful. And they may not fire you, but you will never be the beneficiary of all the little goodies that people get. You know, advice about their career from fellow workers, tips, and, you know, they'll be scared of you. So you've got to be clear and upbeat about it all.
Why do you have to be more upbeat, though? I don't understand. Don't you have to be serious, though, when you're approaching the boss?
You can be. I'm not saying you should be silly, but so I have seen so many people with all kinds of disabilities say, you know, I'm going to need these reasonable accommodations, and here is my situation, and if you do it that way, they will comply, but you will miss the critical caring that people in the workplace have for each other or bosses. And so it's important to ask for what you need, but not in the very almost pre-litigious way that I have heard many people with disabilities act in the workplace.
I see. So speaking of that, I heard that it's important, in order to have those successful first days on the job, in order to have a successful job overall, you got to have successful conversations.
Correct.
Between the employee and the boss, and the boss to the employee.
And co-workers.
And co-workers, yes, yes, yes. So what are the keys to having these successful conversations?
Right. After you get that disability stuff out of the way, which is uncomfortable for everybody, then you're just like everybody else. And you want to ask questions like, I want to be a dream employee. So what would you hope that I would have accomplished in the first 30 days? Or another question like, tell me something about the workplace culture here. What tends to work in terms of, you know, do we eat at our desks? Do we go out for lunch? Do we take 30 minutes? Is it very flexible? Do when we have questions, do we normally want, do you like lots of questions or do you prefer that I, you know, try to answer them myself? Do you prefer questions by email? Do you prefer questions by walking down the hall? You know, it's getting clear about what really works in that workplace. And by your showing interest and asking those questions, you show that you're eager to be a great employee.
Absolutely. So after the blind employee completes his or her first assignments on the job, he or she may get that all-important constructive criticism on each of these tasks from the boss. How should the blind employee respond to this?
If there's anger, the first thing you do is nothing. You can always respond with anger later. The best thing to do is to listen carefully and ask a follow-up question. If you're not understanding, let's say he's criticized you for working too slowly. You can ask a follow-up question by saying, do you have any tips for me as to how I might be able to get quicker? Are there any source of support you might suggest? So instead of saying, no, I'm not, I'm working quite fast, it's really important to not get defensive. It's natural. Every human being gets defensive when criticized. But it's really critical to withhold that and only either say, I'll work on it, or if it's not clear what you need to do to work on it, asking questions.
What if the blind employees get compliments for their hard work from their bosses? How should they respond to this?
Just very simple. Thank you. I appreciate it. We live in a country where we really are not allowed to gloat. There is a real value of being understated. So thank you. I appreciate it is all you need to say. And then what you might want to do is you create a goodie file. Everything good that you do, you put it in a file, including the quotes. So when it comes time for salary renegotiation or promotion, or they're laying off people in a merger or whatever, you have got all these goodies you have all in one place which you can then use as ammunition for why you should get that raise or at least keep your job.
What if the blind employee has worked with the company for a number of years? They're very well liked by their colleagues. They're very well liked by their bosses.
Great.
And they want that dream raise or promotion.
Right.
How do they ask their bosses to give them that raise or promotion?
Yep, it's a perfect segue. As I said, you've hopefully kept all the year's worth of goodies stuff, especially stuff that you've done that has either improved the company's bottom line or improved efficiency or whatever. You then write a letter, an email or whatever, to the boss saying, I really have loved working here. I've enjoyed you. You know, you talk about all the things you've enjoyed, and I feel like I've accomplished a fair amount. I was gratified that you said this about me. I was pleased that we were recognized for blah, and you list some of the major accomplishments. And then you say, it has been a long time since I've had a raise or promotion. I think that I could see myself being excellent in this job, and you describe the job to which you want to be promoted. And why, and how you would adapt the job description to really make it fit your strengths. And then say, I would love to chat with you about this. Let me know if we can. So by putting it in writing, it gives you the chance. It's very hard to make your pitch for a raise unless you're, you know, very, very glib, but verbally. But if you can take your time and do it in writing and get all the ammunition together, sending it to your boss in advance gives him or her a chance to review it, think about it. And that is the best way to maximize your chances. Now, there's one other way, which is more powerful, which is to quietly start doing some job searching. If you get another job offer or even some nibbles of interest for a higher level position from somebody else, now you've got huge leverage in discussions. And if you're really that good and you've been great for all these years, the boss is not going to want to lose you. Not always, but usually not.
Yeah. Let's go back to when it's just 1 or 2 months on the job.
Right.
And the blind employee's work is just piling up so much that they're so overwhelmed and they're so stressed out.
Right.
How might our blind listeners reduce their own stress?
Okay. Well, it's like part of it is simply the old joke about, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And it's the same with you. When you're overwhelmed with your workload, the first thing you might want to do is, if you're not sure where to prioritize and you think you may be able to get away with it, it's maybe time to ask your boss, say, you know, I am overwhelmed. All this stuff is piled up. What would you like to see me prioritize? So that way, at least the boss is feeling that he's getting or she is getting the work that is most important done. So that's one option. The other is, if you know what you need to prioritize, you do need to say, okay, what really is time sensitive and needs to get done or is critical? So you've got to establish priorities, but don't let yourself go overwhelmed by the pile. Because if the huge pile is there, you're in trouble. You know, you're just going to get overwhelmed. If you can get help, if you can get an intern, one of the ways that people who are overwhelmed get help without it costing the company any money is to request an intern. And an intern can take a lot of the crap off your plate. And then finally, if you are allowing things to pile up a lot, you know, you need to figure out what's the cause. Is it really that your boss is Simon Legree, the we're horrible boss, you know, who's giving you too much work? Or are you inefficient? And if you're inefficient, what can you do to get more efficient? Or if the job is over your head, maybe some of that work, you know, maybe you don't understand double entry bookkeeping very well and it's too complicated for you. You know, then see if you can get your job downscaled. So really getting the stuff piled up, having the stuff piled up on your desk is a symptom. It can have many different causes. It's like a headache. You know, you have a headache, it could be a brain tumor, it could be nothing. It could be just a little tension headache. Same thing with a piled up desk. It could be your boss is miserable. It could be you work too slowly. It could be you don't have the skills to do the job. It could be that there is a desperate need for an intern. It could be the stuff that you don't need to do. So you treat it like a symptom, and then once you've figured it out, and if it's simply a matter that you've got to get this work done, find out from your boss what the priorities are, and then take it a baby step at a time.
One tip you give for reducing stress is to have a work-life balance. How can our listeners establish this balance?
I think it varies with the person. I'm not a big general fan of the work-life balance methodology or belief. There are some people who work 80 hours a week and never burn out because they're working at things that they're good at. They feel they're making a bigger contribution to the world if in hours 60 through 80 they are working. I have a friend who's a great cardiologist, and he works nights and weekends because he wants to see as many patients and save as many lives as possible. And he never burns out because he loves it. He's really good at what he does. He's helping his patients tremendously. So he laughs at the work-life balance people. Whereas somebody who, let's say, has got a horrible job, they hate it, they're working as a jackhammer operator, and it's just what they need to do to support their family, sure, then it's important to have work-life balance. But I don't believe one size fits all. You really need to ask yourself, is your life going to be really better if you spend more time playing Monopoly with your family than doing that work? Even if you're an accounts payable clerk, if you are working on that Saturday morning to get all those checks out, you're ensuring that all those people get the money they deserve. And is that not necessarily, if you're not stressed out by that work, if you like that work, is that not in the end a wiser use of your time than watching Saturday morning football or listening to Saturday morning football?
Another tip you give is to be more efficient. How can our blind listeners get their work done more efficiently and be at ease at their job?
Yeah, one of the things that's easiest ways to do that is to find somebody who you know is efficient and have that person watch you. Or if it's a blind person who you know is efficient, have them listen to you. Why don't you, as you're working, describe what you're doing? There's no, you know, very often we're all trying to work as efficiently as we can, but some of us just don't know the tricks of the trade, and some people are naturally better at it than others. Like some people, I'm a terrible artist, but I'm an excellent musician. So, you know, if I need art done, I'm going to go ask somebody else for art guidance. Same as with efficiency. Some people are really efficient by nature, others are not. Find the most efficient person you know and get their tips on how you can be more efficient.
You were talking about illnesses earlier, and one of the illnesses I read on your site is procrastination.
Right.
Another tip you give is not to procrastinate at work.
Well,
and then you also have some cures for curing the illness of procrastination. What cures do you prescribe to our blind workers?
Yeah, indeed, procrastination is career cancer. It really can kill your career. There is a number of techniques, but one of my favorites is to simply be aware of the moment of truth. Every time there's a task that you've got to do, you're making a decision consciously or unconsciously. Should I do the task or should I go get a burrito or something equivalent to that? So you don't always need to do the task, but really being aware of consciously and ask yourself, is my short-term desire for pleasure, that is get the burrito, watch TV, call a friend, whatever it is that outweighed by the long-term benefit of getting the job done and not feeling guilty about the project and getting it and not getting fired and pleasing your spouse if you've got one, that you're not an irresponsible person? So it's really being aware of that moment of truth and looking at the short-term benefits. You don't need necessarily to go and get that burrito. Really ask yourself, sure, you'd like to get the burrito. It's more fun to go get the burrito or watch TV or whatever it is, but really, you don't need that. If it is in your best interest to get the task done, consciously say, okay, I'm going to do it. Now, sometimes people are really helped by having little deadlines. Say, okay, I am going to set a timer. You know, they have these little, you know, kitchen timers. I'm going to set it for 20 minutes, and I'm going to work for 20 minutes, and then I'm going to get the burrito. So sometimes breaking it down into those, you know, reasonable time periods can help.
Another career tip you give, aside from stress, one tip that'll help you have a successful career, is to lower your self-esteem. Right. What are the results of this, and how should a blind person work towards this goal?
It depends, on the individual. Some people, you know, you can't have paralyzingly low self-esteem or you can't do anything. But people as eminent as Abraham Lincoln and George Washington wrote all the time about their paralyzingly low self-esteem. And in fact, I've been privileged to know some of the most successful people on planet Earth. And many of them suffer from always worrying, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I can't do it, I don't, you know. Their worry is what really drives them to far greater accomplishment. In fact, as we all know, that Asian Americans are, as a group, the highest achieving subgroup in America, and they have research on self-esteem shows they have the lowest self-esteem. Unfortunately, I think we've taken low achievers and we tell them that what you need to do is raise your self-esteem, and all it does is it builds their complacency, a sense of entitlement. It's terrible. So I think while you can't have paralyzingly low self-esteem, I think worrying about your competence, feeling you're not good enough, that's what makes one strive. And I think that's very important to remember. And I do know that in the disability community, there is a fair amount of effort to try to build people's self-esteem. I think I can only support that when it's to build it beyond the their self-esteem is above the paralysis stage, as I said. But high self-esteem is very dangerous.
Let's talk more about life inside the workplace now. What are the best ways that blind people can form friendly relationships with their coworkers, colleagues, bosses, etc.?
We come full circle. Remember I said lighthearted attitude toward it and mentioning it up front. It is the 500-pound elephant in the room if you don't mention it. I remember Stanley Rosenbaum, a kid I went to high school with, and he was in a wheelchair. And he made fun of himself all the time. And he would say, who wants to race me? And he would have races in his wheelchair. He just made it. He did not make it like it was a problem. It was just a part of who he was, and he was beloved. Everybody liked Stanley Rosenbaum. And yet I've seen other people who wear their disability with a chip on their shoulder and a sense of entitlement and very dour about it, and they are not very well liked. So if the goal is to be well liked, you need to not make a big deal out of it, not play victim. Yes, you may need your reasonable accommodations, but don't push that too in your face. There is this balance. You have a right to get what you want, but if you push too much, you're just seen as playing victim, and that pleases nobody.
No, it doesn't. Now, how about respect and safety in the workplace? How should our listeners ensure that they're not only respectful of others at work, but that others are respectful of them?
Yeah, it's the same theme. You ask for what you want, but in a very pleasant and tactful way. There is really, 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 as a guy who is sighted, there is a tremendous terror of people with disabilities because they are afraid there's a lawsuit waiting to happen. And so they're always treating them with real kid gloves and really careful to not say the wrong thing because they're just afraid of getting a lawsuit. So, yes, you have a right to be treated with respect, but first, it's if you come off as a person worthy of respect, that is, you are reasonable in what you ask for. You are not high maintenance. You behave like a reasonable person. You are much more likely to get respect. You can't demand respect. You earn respect. And that's whether you're fully sighted or you're not.
How can our listeners respond to those at work who are being disrespectful towards them?
If somebody is angry at you, and especially if they're not angry at others, if you can keep it together, the wise person would say something like, I'm really so sorry I'm making you so furious. What can we do? Notice I used the word, what can we do to improve the situation? If you can do that, that's much better because people do not get angry at random at people. So rather than putting all the blame elsewhere, look and always look inward to yourself first. How did I contribute to this? For example, let's say I had a coworker, and it doesn't matter whether the coworker was sighted or blind, and the coworker was lazy, or constantly made mistakes, or constantly asked for help, and I couldn't get my own work done. And let's say I had a hot temper by nature. Different people have more of a temper, and so finally the person yelled and said, "Can't you get your own work done?" Well, you know what? It's not just that person's fault. The person is acting that way because it was like a balloon that kept building with more and more air until it finally burst. So please don't just put all the blame on the other person. It may be all the other person's fault, but certainly first look inward. And then typically, it can't hurt to say, what can we do? I'm sorry I've made you so angry. Sorry you're so angry. What can we do to make the situation better?
Now let's get on to the happier side of work. There are many recreational classes being held at work, special interest clubs being formed, and the occasional parties.
Right.
How might employees, blind employees, create and participate in these activities?
Yeah. Generally at parties and things, unless you know that the coworker is really into work, that's the time to really not, to really just talk about more personal things. There is a tendency with everybody, but especially with people with disability, just to not think of them as human beings, but more of just these people they've got to work with who've got a disability. But blind people, like everybody else, has hobbies, interests, romantic feelings, political views, everything. And that's a time to particularly show your humanity and not just talk, but asking questions. People love to be asked about them. So one of the best social skills anybody can have is the art of asking people questions like, well, we've sat next to each other at work for months now. I really don't know very much about you. Do you have a family or do you have special hobbies? And then that usually opens the door to them talking about something they'd like to talk about, and that builds a relationship.
Let's talk about our listeners who don't want to work for the boss and rather become self-employed. Tell our blind listeners the benefits and consequences of self-employment.
Yeah, it's the perfect job for some people and the wrong job for others. I am self-employed and love it because I love being a self-starter. I don't like to get permission from anybody to do anything. I can run my career counseling practice exactly as I want to. I love it. And I can work from home. I do like I'm working on the phone with you now, and I have Skype clients and such, and I can, be in my underwear and work, and I love that. And when the weather's nice, I can go out and garden while I'm on the phone with a client. It's wonderful. But many people can't do it because you have to be a self-starter. You have to be able to solve problems all the time on the fly. You have to think on your feet. You have to market, you have to be your own IT person. You can hire a little bit of support for your bookkeeping or accounting or whatever, but basically it's all on you. So it really depends how efficacious you are as a person, how much of a self-starter, and do you need others around you? Sure, even if you're self-employed, you can hire somebody as your part-time assistant without it costing you too much money. But generally, if you're a person who is social, it's not such a good idea. Listen, I have to go. I've got about a minute left or so, and then I must go because I have to, believe it or not, I got to take a shower before my next client comes. So,
okay, so real quickly, how and where can people access all of your articles and listen to your radio show?
My website's martynemko.com, MartyNemko.com. My latest book is How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. That's How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. And my radio show is called Work with Marty Nemko. It's heard every Sunday on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco, or it is available streamed online anywhere in the world. On KALW.org, KALW.org in real time, and then archived for a week, the most recent show on the National Public Radio website, NPR.org.
Marty, I believe your advice will help our visually impaired listeners improve and become successful in their dream careers. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Around the world, you're listening to ACB Radio.